Welcome to the Business Marketing Clubcast, a podcast for B2B marketing people who want to get on and stay ahead in what, let's face it, is the toughest profession in business. We'll be offering insight and inspiration from B2B marketers on a key current topic, advice from experienced CMOs on how to climb the career ladder, and top networking tips. I'm Dave Stevens, a B2B marketer and chair of the Business Marketing Club Network. In this episode, I'll be speaking to Agile Marketing Coach John Webb and SaaS Business Solutions CMO Ross Chapman about what Agile Marketing is, how they've applied it, and with what result. Also, B2B Senior Marketing Manager at Circus Street, Lauren Heaton, will share some great B2B marketing examples and what she's learned from them. And Chris Wilson shares a key lesson he took on his journey to being MD of marketing agency Earnest. All of that, and I'll explain what the Business Marketing Club is and why it might just be the thing for you. So stay tuned. Agile marketing has been something of an on-off trend for marketers down the years. Agility is vital to success in B2B marketing today, though, because it supports the need to accelerate digital transformations and it meets increasing and evolving customer needs. High-performing marketing teams are now employing agile methods, first used in software development, because it enables them to develop, deliver, and iterate their marketing campaigns more quickly and thereby achieve better results. Agile marketing coach John Webb is with me now. John, hello.
Morning.
John, you're founder of Get to Growth. Can you tell us a bit about what Get to Growth is?
Sure. So Get to Growth, as you mentioned, is a coaching company for marketers to get them up to speed and to really get them up and running with Agile in a marketing sense, in a marketing context.
So I think we've got to start off with big term. What exactly is Agile marketing?
Sure. So I look at Agile marketing in kind of three layers.
Okay.
So the first part of it is It's an approach. And think of it as a mindset. So it's very much in terms of thinking of principles, thinking of just kind of ways of doing things and a way of approaching situations. So it's kind of at a high level, a philosophy. And that helps kind of guide you as you're doing your everyday jobs, everyday work. The second layer then is supporting that is a set of specific methodologies. So people and companies have developed ways of working that apply those principles, apply those philosophies, and what they've codified them as actual methodologies. So you might have heard of things like Scrum, Kanban, etc., etc.
Kind of software world production line techniques.
Exactly. So they are what I call methodologies, right. and they are ways of interpreting and then applying those philosophies and the approaches at that kind of higher level, and then underpinning those methodologies are certain practices. So a lot of things that I think probably people are familiar with that they're doing in their day-to-day lives, in their day-to-day jobs, like daily stand-ups and workflow boards and things like that. They're practices. They're kind of isolated things that you do, and they make up the methodologies. So if you're talking about an agile methodology like Scrum, for example, within that are then all these different practices that come together.
Okay.
So it's those three layers that essentially are agile and what agile is all about. And as you mentioned, it comes from more of a software development, product development background. Mm. And I think that's one of the challenges for marketers because it's not invented by us. It's not created by us. It's not really designed for our world. It's got huge applicability, it's got huge advantages, and we've seen in many, many companies around the world where it's had significant results by applying these agile principles and agile methodologies. But it is different. And I think that's one of the things that we need to get our head around, which is why I set up Get to Growth and why I'm doing agile coaching.
We'll come to those layers and we'll come to the challenges of application in just a moment. But perhaps, first of all, we should talk about why it's a must for today's marketing team. So I've been in marketing for 25 years, John, and I've got away without Agile for a good chunk of that. So why is it a must today?
You say that, but if you look at a lot of the stats out there, for example, the one that I always refer back to, and this was a study by McKinsey, which saw that marketing programs are still taking, on average, 6 months take them to market, to go to market. Mm. So if you're looking at that in this day and age, that's forever. That's so long. And everything's changed by that point. You know, markets have changed, customers have changed, demands have changed, et cetera, et cetera. So if you're looking at what marketing's doing at the moment, we can't afford to have, you know, a program that's taking 6 months to bring it to market. And that's what Agile's all about. Think of it almost like a new operating system for marketing. And what it's doing is on one side connecting strategy, and then on the other side connecting the actual delivery of that strategy. And it's how do you do that? It's the ways of working. It's how you organize your teams, how you build your processes and systems to make your strategies much more effective, but also efficient and fast, et cetera, in the actual delivery of them.
I guess, though, you could critique it as a methodology, as kind of marketing without a plan. And you know, again, going back to my client-side marketing days, a lot of my time has been spent trying to convince B2B marketers to actually write a marketing plan in the first place. Is this the antithesis of that approach?
No, not at all. I mean, one of the very big myths and one, I think, of the big blocks for people adopting agile marketing is that it doesn't involve planning. It doesn't involve strategy. Mm. And that's absolutely not the case.
Right.
What Agile is doing is changing the way that you are planning. It's changing the cadence that you're planning. So you're still, you know, thinking strategically, you're still coming up with long-term plans, long-term strategies. But it's then how do you take those? How do you chunk them back so that it then determines what you need to be doing right here, right now? So it's, like I say, think of it almost like an operating system that takes those longer-term plans, but then tells you, okay, how do you actually deliver them on a day-to-day basis? And it's what it's doing is defining your focus, defining your prioritization. So essentially what you're doing is you're balancing that long-term view with the short-term. Because short-term, you're always going to have, you know, firefighting, things that crop up, things that need to be delivered. But it's questioning the importance of those vis-a-vis that long-term path that you're on.
Okay. So you've convinced me. I'm going to dive in then. So you talked about these three layers of philosophy, methodology, and principle. So can we go into a bit more detail about those? What are the key elements of each of those layers?
So at its heart, what Agile does is it essentially condenses down those planning cycles.
Right.
So it moves you from, you know, traditional marketing, which is looking at, you know, annual marketing plans or even, you know, 6 monthly marketing plans. And essentially what it's doing is getting you to, in a kind of microcosm way, replan every 2 to 3 weeks.
Right.
So the basis of that is what's called a sprint. Now, people may have heard of sprints. You've probably already come across sprints.
Yeah, yeah.
So the idea behind a sprint is, firstly, you're condensing time.
Okay.
So there's a lot of scientific studies and psychological studies that show that if you actually condense time and you actually put a time limit, a short-term time limit on a piece of work, the productivity goes up. The productivity goes through the roof.
To try and meet the deadline.
Correct. To try and meet the deadline to create that focus.
Right.
So that's what sprints do.
Okay.
They provide that focus and they provide the momentum to get things done. But what they also do is, A, they allow you to essentially replan every 2 to 3 weeks. So you're constantly looking at what your priorities are. You're constantly looking at, okay, am I moving in the direction of that long-term plan? How does that balance versus the short-term things that are cropping up, you know, the firefighting and demands coming from sales or wherever? Mm. So you're constantly able, every 2 to 3 weeks, to reassess that. Now, you're not spending hours and hours and hours doing that. It's a condensed planning cycle. But what it means is you can then, you know, adjust, change, pivot as you need to. Mm. What it also then allows for is greater innovation. Because what you're then able to do in those shorter timeframes is put more things to market, try different things, get results quicker, and therefore it fosters innovation.
More test and learn, isn't there?
It's absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. It's all about test and learn, experimentation, and getting insights and data to prove out your hypotheses and to question what you're doing, to question the strategy that you're on, to make sure that it's moving in the right direction and that the assumptions that you've made are correct, to test that the market is where you think it is, to make sure that the market conditions are still relevant, are still what you're planning for, to test, you know, customers, to test customer demand. Is there the demand there? Is there the interest there that you thought there was? So constantly testing and then iterating on that, using these short-term planning cycles, means that you're much more flexible and much more adaptable to change and moving in the direction of that plan.
So for people who have listened to you talk about agile marketing and thinking, well, okay, this is something interesting here, and I want to try something out in my own business, where do you start? How do you go about bringing in this new methodology?
Again, I think one of the big failings of people that try and adopt agile marketing is that they try and do everything at once.
Right.
They try and move, you know, whole lock, stock and barrel, everything to an agile approach.
Okay.
And I advocate doing it the other way. I advocate take an agile approach to adopting agile. And what I mean by that is start small. Start with doing little things. Start by using daily stand-ups, you know, daily 15-minute meetings, which are check-ins for your team. Mm. Start by creating a very simplified workflow board where you're looking at, you know, what work you've got coming in, what's being worked on, what's going out, and things right. like that. So start with kind of isolated practices, and then start building up from there. See what works, double down, and then start layering on top of that.
And I guess I also will want to get up to speed a bit more with actually the methodology of agile marketing. So is there something I can read or a training I can go on, and obviously hiring you as well? But where do I start? What can I read to get up to speed with this?
So there's a lot of material out there about agile as a whole. Mm. One thing I'd definitely say is for marketers, try and find information about agile marketing specifically, because
right.
it is very different. And you've got to take into consideration the context and the nuances of marketing. Mm. So my website, which is gettogrowth.com. There's other websites out there. Agile Sherpas has a load of really good stuff on there.
Right.
And then there's a great book out there by a guy called Scott Brinker.
Is he a marketer?
He is a marketer.
Okay.
He's a marketer, but he's also a technologist.
Right.
And so I don't know whether he's got a very famous blog and very famous background as the chief martech. So he focused more on the technology side of marketing,
right.
but he wrote a book called Hacking Marketing, which
right.
is talking about how do you bring in these kinds of principles from kind of the dev product development worlds into marketing and make them relevant.
John Webb, founder of Get to Growth, thanks very much.
Pleasure.
Ross Chapman began applying agile marketing techniques for the first time at SaaS business Arc Solutions. And he joins me now. Ross, thanks for coming along to the podcast.
Great to be here.
So how did you come to be using agile at Arc?
I think it's a combination of a few things that have occurred. One, you know, I think we're all feeling it. There's more pressure to deliver quicker results that are more impactful.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've seen, you know, I think every marketing director out there is feeling the pressure to deliver more and more and more. And it's typically in a form of tactics. So
yeah.
when I joined up with this kind of nascent SaaS business, you know, in my mind is how do we deliver more and more quickly?
Mm.
Second off is, you know, I'm a big believer in marketing being based in customer needs, in real customer needs that typically I try to make sure I've heard myself, heard articulated myself.
Mm.
And, you know, one of the Agile principles is about, you know, delivering a brilliant customer experience. And so I was very attracted to that element
okay.
of it.
Okay. So then in reality, you go in, you apply Agile. What did Agile accomplish for you at Arc, and how did it accomplish it?
So I think the biggest thing that Agile accomplished for me at Arc is it gave me a mechanism to create some inertia within a business to get the flywheel moving.
Right.
To paint a little bit of a picture. So Arc is a very nascent business, just about to take its first outside investment with a new value proposition to take to market that really hadn't arguably hadn't reached product market fit at that point. And so, you know, as the first marketing hire, the marketing leader in the business, you know, really having to balance two things. And that's one, you know, getting a strong strategy in place that delivers a differentiated product or proposition that's something that the business can execute on. But at the same time, also making things happen, testing against the market, mm-hmm. driving some customer engagement.
So kind of the long and short of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Les Binet. And Agile really gave me a mechanism to balance those two varying demands, you know, to develop strategy iteratively, as well as to get this brand new marketing function thinking about how we were going to deliver together.
And was it really Agile that was kind of the crux here? How does achieving that outcome through Agile techniques compare with not using Agile at all?
It's a great question. I don't think, arguably, it's not just Agile. Agile is not some secret new magic button. It's a great buzzword. And just like many of the marketing buzzwords before it, account-based marketing and social media marketing and all these things before it, it's, you know, we should view it a little bit skeptically. It's not a new thing. What Agile really did for me, what I recognized in Agile, is it brought together the best of my marketing philosophies, the best of what I knew worked. Yeah. It provided a framework for delivering that. So it provided me, you know, not to be repetitive, but it the Agile framework and the Agile way of thinking provided me a way to apply marketing as I know it works best, to think about customer needs and delivering a customer experience, and to think about validating ideas or propositions or messaging.
That's
and
neat.
To do
so
that very rapidly.
It's kind of not separate from marketing itself. It's a different way of deploying marketing.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. So coming away from your experience, Dart, what are the lessons that you, about Agile that you take away?
There are two big things that come to mind. Is that so the first is that Agile teaches us, and I can't quite remember how it's written in the Agile Marketing Manifesto, but Agile teaches us to value validated learnings over opinions. Mm. And in B2B, in marketing, probably more generally, in business, even if you're not a marketer, if you're a product leader, you're a CEO, oftentimes we go, we think this is what people want, and thus we're going to shout really loud about it.
Right.
Every business, I've had about interviews with about 15 CEOs over the last 2 weeks, and you know, it's quite common to say, we're different because. Mm. We're different because. And then when you really start to peel that back and ask why people know that to be the case, they say, well, you know, that's why we've designed the product this way, or this is our view. And I think the job, a marketing leader's job is to go back to the basics. And marketing is defined, at least academically, as how to meet customer needs at a profit. Mm. So we've got to go back and we've got to challenge, that view as to why that proposition is right by making sure we understand it in the context of customer needs. And so Agile have provided me a great framework to say, okay, let's take this principle of validated learnings over opinions and enter a sprint, to use Agile terminology, with a view to validating whether our customers actually feel that way. So that was the biggest thing, you know, that Agile offered.
So here's the getting off the fence question. So will you be using Agile marketing techniques in future?
Yes, absolutely. I'm a convert. Okay. I've subscribed to the Church of Agile. I think that's for the second reason that I was going to allude to before, is that the other thing that we struggle with in business today, and certainly in marketing teams, but I'm sure this exists across product development, engineering, sales, et cetera, is that we all act as individuals. If we think about the typical B2B marketing team, you've got content marketing and product marketing and field marketing and customer marketing, each with very valid work to be done and their own job specs and their own KPIs and OKRs and these sorts of things. But Agile also brings in a team view. It says, what are we as a team going to accomplish together to deliver a good customer experience over the next cycle of time? Mm-hmm. And I think that is selfishly, as a manager and a leader, you know, that's something we need. We need for the teamwork to be more than the output of each individual. Mm. And so I will definitely be using Agile again in the future to bring teams together to deliver good outcomes.
Ross Chapman, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Every family has its ugly duckling, the unloved, unappreciated, ignored and untrendy one, the outcast. The ugly duckling of marketing is B2B marketing. But you know, that's a mistake. In fact, B2B marketing and B2B marketers need to be nurtured and celebrated. 80% of all UK firms derive at least some of their income from B2B. 44% of UK turnover comes from B2B activity. So you ignore this ugly duckling at your peril. There's some great B2B marketing out there. And I'm joined now by B2B Senior Marketing Manager at Circus Street, Lauren Heaton, to look at some of it. Lauren, hello. Welcome to the podcast.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's great to see you. So tell me, first of all, what is Circus Street? Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So Circus Street is an online training provider that helps globally build brands' digital capability. We can train up to 100,000 employees per large brands. Wow. And we're really just about helping the world stay upskilled and reskilled in the 21st century. A lot of brands are lagging behind with the digital future. And so we're really there to step in and help facilitate that learning and help them keep on their way in the future.
Brilliant. So there's some great B2B marketing out there. What's caught your eye?
You know, I have been in B2B marketing since the start of my career, so I'm a little bit partial to, the emphasis on what B2B marketing can have for a company. But something that really struck my eye, because there's so many channels out there and there's so much in digital marketing happening, but actually I'm finding that as we continue to get clouded with digital marketing channels going on, it's actually kind of going back to those authentic roots and the really organic channels that really help drive a business. Something I've really been watching with companies is their referral marketing campaigns, is really, if you can even get a handful of really great clients or customers who are willing to shout about you or talk about you, and you kind of nurture that organically and you find the right channels to put it out there, I find it to just be one of the quickest and highest returning channels for leads for B2B marketing.
So referral-based marketing. So what is it that impresses you about referral-based marketing?
Yeah, I think it's the way that companies go about finding who they want to talk about their company and who they're trying to get more of. I kind of came across it organically. In a lot of my careers, I came across clients who just coincidentally kept shouting about us and talking about how great we were and realizing, wow, I could really capture this and use this across of a lot of different channels. And so I think it's really just staying really close to your accounts team and sales team, identifying those really key accounts that have a lot of potential growth, both for the account and as well as helping the company. And so, I think it's really just kind of always keeping your eye out and identifying who could potentially be your champion for your brand and then finding a way to harness that and use it organically and in your marketing.
And I guess it's so much more powerful, isn't it, if you've got a kind of natural advocate out there who can really talk up the work that your business has been doing.
Absolutely. I think you really have to identify. I don't think referral marketing is for every B2B business.
Right.
I think for me, it's always come up organically, and then I found a way to kind of nurture that and grow that. So I don't think if you try going at it in a really aggressive way, it's going to be quite as successful. I think you kind of see them opportunities coming up and then finding a way to harness them once you see them happening.
Got it. And do you have an example maybe at Circus Street or elsewhere in your career where you've really been able to use referral-based marketing that you can talk us through?
Yeah, I've seen kind of two ways. A company I've seen do it really well is actually Box.com. Mm. They have for B2B marketing or for B2B referrals, it's a two-way street. So the person referring them gets more storage.
Right.
So they get free storage for it. And then also the person on the receiving end gets a discount on their first set of storage. So there's really a two-way street of benefiting from a referral. And obviously, if you can get into a company for its storage, as Google has and Box, it can make quite a big stamp. For Circus Street, I think I've really seen it through just our testimonials. You know, we're always trying to get testimonials and case studies. And through working with those accounts and brands, we've identified some really great stakeholders and clients that are willing to shout about us, and just working with them and finding new avenues, interviews, videos, blogs, whatever it may be that they're interested in, and really harnessing that.
And the way that you talk about it is as kind of something that kind of happens organically when you do B2B marketing, and then you kind of nurture it some more. Does it work the other way around as well? Like, can you kind of plan to go and do some referral-based marketing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the two-way street is you originally, case studies are part of every B2B marketer's arsenal. And I think so when you're going to get those case studies and you're speaking to those clients and you're getting the quotes and the stats on, you know, the program or the product that they were using, that's kind of your first way to then go out there and have others be able to see that case study. But then at the same time, you're finding even more clients who are willing to come forward. So you're starting with one channel to get it. But then organically, we have events where we invited some clients and some prospects. And it ended up having this great organic referral conversation about how they were using Circus Street and how they could benefit from it. And that just happened on its own. But because we'd gotten them together for a different reason, that happened as well.
And so if I'm starting out and I want to see that there's something in this referral-based marketing and I want to kind of get to it. How do you go about starting?
Yeah, I think the first thing you need to do is find out with your accounts and sales team who your best clients are, who your best brands are, which ones are having the best accounts, the most success.
Right.
Start there, find out who your current champions are, find out what was great about that situation. And then as you're marketing to your target personas and your target audiences, you're trying to connect who else would really benefit from that example. And trying to pair those two groups together. So we do a lot of course, persona marketing. And so I'm trying to identify a persona that had a lot of success to other personas that could have that same kind of success. And then I'm also not just using the case study. We're doing videos and interviews and blogs and, you know, all sorts of other channels of marketing through that one piece of referral where they're willing to shout about it.
So there's a lot of preparation. You need to pick which are the right referrals for you.
Yeah.
And then you need to make sure that you're using all of the different types of content channels available to exploit it to the full.
Absolutely. You can have some really great clients who had phenomenal programs or phenomenal experience with your product, but it could be really bespoke or more of a one-off. Mm. So you're really trying to find those ones who have a more reoccurring and consistent success story, something that could be really relatable to other people in the audiences that you're targeting, that they could really find relevance with about how it could work for them as well. So you really kind of got to look through them.
So in the referral marketing that you've done, what have you taken away? What have you learned from the experience that you're going to apply in future?
Yeah. So I think, like I said, a lot of it has happened organically, and I'm kind of nurturing that and capturing that as it goes, but actually planning ahead, really looking at our alumni network. Circus Street has a phenomenal and a very large amount of alumni who have completed our lessons at really large brands.
Right.
And then have now also moved on to other companies and are in higher positions because they've taken our training. So for me, it's really about leveraging and working with that alumni group to see, you know, how we can shout about their success because of our product and vice versa. So my next step is really looking ahead at alumni programs and referral programs for that alumni group.
So you've got kind of natural advocates there already.
Absolutely.
Right?
I think every company has alumni, no matter what your product or service is, unless you're a long form, you know, kind of product, they're going to come and go and move on. And so being able to really stay with them and nurture them for content and referrals, they're a really great group. They're your top advocates. They've already completed using your product or service. And so they're just sitting there waiting to kind of help grow your business.
Brilliant. Lauren, it's great talking to you. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
Next up, Chris Wilson shares some key lessons that he's taken on his journey to being MD of marketing agency Earnest. Chris, thanks for coming along to the podcast today.
Well, thanks for having me, Dave.
Perhaps first of all, you can tell us a little bit about what Earnest does.
It's a whole manner of wonderful things. So I set Earnest up 10 years ago, almost to the day, actually. And we're a B2B creative agency, which is not a contradiction in terms.
it's a challenging job to have.
And the challenge never ends. We set up because we felt that all these marvellous consumer brands had consumer agencies doing very creative stuff. And we felt that B2B was just as, if not more, interesting and kind of deserving of that. And so we brought a team together to try and chase out the humdrum in B2B marketing, which is our sort of our tagline, I guess. Anyway, and today there's 50 of us. We're based in London, New York. We work with all sorts of clients trying to just kind of raise that bar on creativity, really.
Brilliant. So what qualities have made you the brilliant B2B marketer that you are today?
Yeah, it's always with the classic British humbleness, which I've learned to reject now that I'm spending a lot of time in the US. But it's hard to hear that word brilliant in reference to oneself. But anyway, so I think it sounds incredibly dull, but I do think actual training and qualifications are really important. It constantly drives me insane that we've got this amazing profession, in inverted commas, but the professions, you know, law, accountancy, medicine, they have lots of qualifications. And you never question the lawyer, you never question the accountant. And well, actually, to be these days, people do question the doctors. But the point is they've got qualifications. And right at the start of the career, having come from a long line of accountants, I felt that I needed qualifications. I felt if I'm going into marketing, it's what I want to do. And I've read books and this is my thing. I've done my university degree, but this is the career I want to take. So I took the CIM diploma really early on in my career, early 20s, only a few years ago. But it set me up, I think, with foundations and frameworks and theory that's really helpful. It takes a lot of subjectivity away. Mm. And it means when you're approaching a marketing problem, you've got that kind of framework to fall back on. And you can think, okay, right, well, let's start. Let's go through the process. Let's work it through. Mm. And I just, you know, my sort of belief is that all marketers should go down a qualifications track at some point. They should engage in learning and development because, it really helps. But two, I think there's a certain badge to it that is important. You know, we all battle to prove our value within the businesses that we work. And so qualifications, I think, are an important part
of that.
I think
that's really interesting. So personally, I'm a CIM chartered marketer, and I found actually talking about myself as that has helped people who don't really understand what marketing is have some confidence in it as an approach.
I mean, exactly. I completely agree. I the last thing we want is this, label of the colouring in department. And if we've got qualifications, it says, look, we're proper. We've got actual things that you have to do and pass to be able to do marketing. We didn't accidentally end up in marketing. We weren't sat somewhere and says, are you busy? No. All right, come on, you can do the marketing. Mm-hmm. We've got to push the whole profession out of that. And the way we do that starts with training and qualifications. I genuinely believe that.
To ask you, though, whether the training and qualifications that you get through the CIM can set you up appropriately for a B2B environment. Some people would say CIM is a bit too FMCG.
So that's a really good question. So, I mean, first off, the answer first off is yes. Let's start positively. I still refer back to it. I still find it really useful. But, and here's the big caveat, every single case example, study, textbook, it's all FMCG referencing and all that sort of stuff. So you have to be able to get past that. And I found kind of two things going on in parallel. If I learned marketing theory, but then constantly I had to myself apply that into B2B. And that was the harder bit. And I think today, with people like, you know, the DMA and the IDM, I think there is more out there that does focus down on what qualifications work in B2B. But at the time, there wasn't a lot, and that's where I started. But no, I take your point. They are very that way leaning. Mm-hmm. But I still found them useful nonetheless, I'd say.
So get yourself qualifications so that you can understand the basics.
Definitely.
What else?
So I think the next thing that I got completely obsessed by, actually, and there's two sides to this. One's getting close to the customer, and the second one is getting close to the business. And they sort of kind of fit together. I mean, again, classic marketing textbooks, that it says that's the definition of marketing, is that you're identifying customer needs and then from that creating products and services that they would wish to buy.
Yeah.
But not enough people are meeting customers. And the bit that was the tipping point for me was I was this rather useless 23-year-old as an account exec in a very small agency. And I was sent up to Chester to my one client. And they said, oh, today you're actually going out on a sales visit with one of the sales guys.
Right.
And that changed me from then on, because I thought, actually, that's where you learn everything. You don't learn it in a meeting room or in a boardroom or looking at a report. You go out there and you meet these people. And this customer had so much to say about the products he was buying from this organisation and the experience he was getting. And that changed certainly what we did as a result, but fundamentally changed my view is that actually you just go out there, get on the road, go and see them, go with salespeople to do that. And I'm lucky in my role within the agencies, that's almost all I do, you know, which is a bit of an extreme end of it. But I just think that's critical. And then the business side, getting close to the business, came from the fact that I think where I started in my agency career the agency was run by someone that was a very good business person.
Right.
And I mean that in almost a sort of quite traditional, I'm going to start and run and grow a business. And the fact that it was an agency was sort of almost accidental.
Okay.
So he wasn't really what I would call a traditional agency person. Didn't have that sort of way about him, but he did have business nous. And I think that got me into this sort of wonderful fascination with how a business works, any business, whether it's, you know, this particular agency's business or the client's business. I always want to know, how does it make money? Where does its cost of sales sit? How does it get products and services to the market? Mm. What are the barriers for the business financially? Where is its big levers? And I just think in marketing, it's a really commercial discipline. And I think it's often seen as a creative discipline. Mm. My role day to day in my own organization is not very creative at all. It's very business management focused. And I encourage all of our guys to learn about their business, the business that they're in, but also the businesses that they're trying to help.
And how do you do that? Because I guess if you're the MD of an agency, it's kind of relatively easy, right?
Yeah.
But if you're positioned within a marketing department, particularly in B2B, which sometimes can be quite a lonely and lowly situation, how do you get to find out what those levers are?
Yeah, so I was, again, really good question. I remember, because I didn't start out in an agency, I started out working for NatWest as NatWest Home Loans, actually, in Birmingham.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And,
great place, Birmingham.
It is. I lived there for many years, actually. And again, I was a naive and probably somewhat cocky 20-year-old at the time. And I was 21. And I was doing this work there. And I just thought, you know, I'm not quite sure what I'm doing in the bigger context. And I had the stupidity, arrogance, whatever it was, to go and ask the person who ran the whole of this area, I don't really understand how this place works. What does it do? You know, how does it make money? I don't quite get it. I know I'm doing this bit over there, and I know it's not particularly an important bit, but I just don't get the whole thing. And he was sort of, I think he was kind of a bit taken aback, probably a bit cross as well, like some idiot 21-year-old kid, you know, going, what's all this about sort of thing. Yeah. But give him his dues, he told me about it. And I think that's, I mean, probably don't do it as sort of bluntly and clumsily as I did at the time, but I would encourage everyone to do that. Go and, I mean, CFOs are a great source.
There's no shame in not knowing and actually just owning up to not knowing and wanting to ask.
So, yeah, I agree. There's a thing that we were talking about earlier this year in the agency is that you've got a kind of 30-day amnesty on any given situation. So you can ask the stupid questions as much as you want for 30 days.
Yes.
After 30 days, if you ask, you should have asked that already.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So actually, we have this kind of whole thing. It's just get them all out. 30 days. Let's just go for it. Let's find out as much as we can. And it could be you get I don't know answers as well, which is also fine. But if you've been there like a year or you've been doing something for a year and you don't know the answer, why didn't you ask? You know, in that 30 days, you're risk-free. You can just ask the questions,
I
think.
It's the honeymoon period.
It is the honeymoon period, yeah, that's right. And if it's done in the right way, it shows enthusiasm and all that sort of stuff as opposed to just blunt ignorance sort of thing. You know, I was bluntly ignorant when I did mine, but I think everyone should do that.
Chris Wilson, MD at Earnest, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's it. Time's up. That's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Clubcast. My thanks to my guests, John Webb, Ross Chapman, Lauren Heaton and Chris Wilson. And thanks to you. Please do let us know what you think of our podcast today, what you've liked, what we can do better. You can contact us at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. That's businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And that's also the address to use to contact us if you'd like to take part in future podcasts. We welcome lots of guests and also if you've got ideas for what you'd like us to cover. It's also the address to use if you'd like to find out more about the Business Marketing Club. The Business Marketing Club is a network for B2B marketers. It's run by B2B marketers for passion, not profit. We're not around to make money. We're around to look out for one another. And the Business Marketing Club is behind this podcast. It runs a events, mentoring programs for UK-based B2B marketers. So if you're working in business-to-business marketing or thinking of working in business-to-business marketing or just interested in business-to-business marketing, we are for you. It doesn't matter whether you're just starting out or whether you've been in the profession for decades, whether you're a CMO or a marketing executive, whether you're client side or agency side, whether you're based in London or Long Eaton, we've got something to support you. We are the only sector agnostic support network for B2B marketers in the UK, run by B2B marketers. We can connect you with other B2B marketers, whether you want to bounce your ideas off of others, develop your career, share strategies, or just have a drink, some chips and chill. You can come along to events to hear from great speakers or to discuss topics of the moment or chat with fellow marketers. You can become a mentor or be mentored by other B2B marketers who can help you get on. You can stay up to date with the latest thinking with our monthly newsletter and with website blogs. And if you want to get active, you know, help us organize those and other activities, it's the place for you as well. So look us up at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And when you contact us, do mention that you found us through the podcast. So that's it. I'm Dave Stevens. Thanks for listening.